All right. Good morning. Wednesday morning Bible study. We're continuing our study on this book, The 10 Lies That Satan Loves to Tell by Pastor Andrew Jones. And I think we're on lie number 3 now, right? Correct? I'm guessing most of you read it, even if you didn't, that's okay. Let's start by kind of skimming through it. I'm going to point out some highlights and some insights that I received from it, and all of you chime in as we go along as well, and we'll point this out. So on page 54, he starts out by pointing out the purpose of advertising is to create in us a desire for more, isn't it? Well, I think he kind of danced around the topic a little bit as you read this chapter, that advertising isn't necessarily bad, but it can be if it causes us to idolize things that we want. So I've heard of most of these little sayings that he had here. Have it your way from Burger King. I remember that one.
Yes.
Double your pleasure, double your fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just from gum? Just by having gum, you can have double the pleasure and fun. How about that? Expect more, pay less. I remember that one.
Okay.
I never heard that, the other one, because you're worth it, L'Oreal. Maybe I haven't paid attention to those commercials. I don't remember that one.
You're the wrong gender.
Yeah, I am the wrong. Right. So the end of that intro part there, he says, the insatiable human desire that we all have for more, more, more. We want more, don't we? That is, I think, part of our fallen, sinful human nature. And it may be goods or things. It may be other stuff. Relationships, knowledge, fame or attention, some kind of emotion or affection. We want more of something. All of us seem to do that. We want more. So Satan in the garden, the end of the first paragraph. And she, Eve, currently is not like God in that one particular way, so she is missing out. There is more to be had, and that more is so easily accessible. Just do it, Eve. That's Satan's message, and that's another slogan, isn't it? Just do it. Comes from Nike, right? Top of the next page. As we have noted already, the problem is that in becoming more like God in this one way, Eve will lose her likeness to God in many other ways. He mentioned that, Pastor Jones mentioned that, I think, in the previous chapter or the one before that, and I think that's insightful. He brings it up here again, that, Eve and Adam, they're like, oh, we want to be like God in this way, and knowing good from evil, except that when they do that, they're going to lose their likeness to God in a whole bunch of other ways. Their holiness, their perfection, their love for God, their obedience, etc. So you gain one thing, but lose a whole bunch of others. All right. The advertising slogan, you will be like God, turns out to be both true and false. I don't know if you've heard me say it. I don't know if we've said that in this book yet. But Satan's lies generally contain a smidgen of truth and a dose of falsehood on purpose. I think a liar who is intentionally lying to someone, and Satan is the king of lies, they include a little dose of truth so that it's easily believed by those who are trying to be fooled. Okay? So again, here it's true. You will be like God. Well, that's true. You'll be like God in this one way. But you will no longer be like God in all these other ways. He doesn't tell them that. All right, Satan's desired outcome, middle of page 55. Satan's desired outcome with this lie is that we are never satisfied, that we consume and devour as much as we possibly can. Boy, that sounds like American culture, doesn't it? We are consumers. I really like that inset on the bottom of page 55, that highlight, which comes from the text right next to it. Satan hopes that we will look at what God has given us and dismiss it as not enough or not good enough. So Satan is creating discontent within us. We're not content with what we have, or what we have is not good enough. How often do we look at advertising and we say, well, I have a car, but I don't have that car. I want a nicer car.
Viper.
Yeah, Viper, right. That's exactly right. If anybody wants to gift me a Dodge Viper, I would accept. Yes, we always want more, right? You may have food, but you don't have that food that's so delicious and juicy looking on the screen, right? On the advertising. All right. All right, next page, 56. First full paragraph there. In this way, Satan seeks to move our desires out of alignment with God's desires. Then, Satan seeks to move our desires into alignment with his own evil desires. I highlighted that and put a star next to it. Because what happened with Satan to begin with? He was an archangel, highest of the angels. He wanted to be like God. He wanted to be God. And God said, no, that's you're being disobedient and rebellious. And God kicked him out of heaven. Satan still wants to be God. So what is he trying to do? Here's a way that he can make himself, for a short period of time here on earth before Judgment Day, he can make himself a little God. I thought this was insightful. I've never heard this before. Satan is trying to get us to disassociate ourselves with the will of God and rather link ourselves to Satan's desires. Satan desires discontent. And when we are discontent, we are aligned with Satan and he becomes a little God over us. Right? You see that? I read that and I'm like, wow, that's a good point right there. Satan is still trying to be God. All right. So the next paragraph after that, Satan seeks to make God's people selfish, gluttonous, and addicted. Satan wants people who are unable to restrain themselves from anything they desire. A lack of self-control. You see that in society today? Yeah, and I will say, I didn't say this last night, but I heard a news story recently. There's a growing trend among like school boards and communities to ban cell phones and social media from children and teenagers. And I'm cheering that on. I'm like, yes, because absolutely it creates a lack of self-control. That kids haven't learned that, frankly, adults half the time don't have the self-control, and kids especially don't, and so they're exposed to these things that some of them are good, some of them are bad, and they just keep consuming on their phones. And so to not have cell phones and social media for kids and teenagers, I think, is a good thing. So I'm glad to hear about that trend. I hope it continues. All right, let me pause there. Any other thoughts or comments or questions on those first few pages? No? Are you all frozen? Everybody's cold? Minds aren't working yet? You need some coffee for lubrication of your brain? It's not working? All right.
Well, I think that, as I think of children in particular, one of the things they'll always say is, it's unfair.
Yeah.
And we as adults don't maybe say it in that way, but we act that same way.
Yeah, right.
Unfair.
Yeah.
He talks about the vineyard owner.
Yep.
And hiring everybody in. And I think that the unfairness is discontentment with what we don't have.
Yes, right. We're looking at what we're missing. And we're discontent with that. You're right. Yes, and he gets to the parable of the vineyard owner, and we're going to talk about that a little more too. Yes, absolutely, that's a great example. All right, the fear behind the lie. So bottom of page 56. The fear behind this lie is the fear of missing out, a fear of scarcity, a fear of being deprived. Do we have that fear? I think we so often do. Why do we save up and why do we sometimes hoard? Because we're afraid we won't have enough. I will tell you, poking fun at myself, my wife will periodically find a little stash of chocolate somewhere in her house. And I'll say, oh, I forgot about that over there, that little stash. She said, it's turning white. I said, okay, then you can throw it out. I don't know why. People get give me chocolate. My wife gives me chocolate. My kids give me chocolate for Father's Day. They know I love it. And I eat some of it, and some of it I put in containers and put it in the cupboard, and I think, okay, I'm having some self-control because I'm not eating it all now, but I'm going to save it and hoard it for a few weeks from now. And then I might forget about it. Or I might not. Yeah.
Pastor.
Yeah.
See that on this last storm, you know, that I guess people in the cities are taking a month's worth of bread.
Yeah.
And Bob probably knows all about it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. Right.
You can only eat so much bread.
Yeah.
Yes.
Last night somebody mentioned that they saw a story about that, and somebody had was buying like 20 gallons of milk because of the storm coming. And I'm like, you can't even preserve it that long. And yeah, no. I know you can freeze milk, but you're not going to fit that much in a freezer.
Right.
What are you going to do with that much milk?
Yeah.
Well, they were afraid they were going to run short. I don't know.
The fear of scarcity.
The fear of scarcity, right. Fear of scarcity.
Like toilet paper during COVID.
Yes.
Right.
Did you read the chapter? He brings that up.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember that.
Yes, absolutely. Right. Yes, Jeannie.
Yeah.
But when M&Ms are on sale, you just have to because they're on sale.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. That's a different story when it's on sale. Yeah. Yeah. All right, so the top of page 57, kind of the end of the section there. Whatever the case may be, Satan wants us focused on what we lack, not on what we have, not on the good gifts God has given us. That's also the inset there, but the end of that little section. How true is that? You know, so often Jesus in his parables turns things upside down, turns things around from a different perspective. And this is one of those cases where that happens. We look at what somebody else has, and we look at what we have, and we think, I don't have enough. Look at how much they have. Instead, we should look at what we have and say, how many people don't have any? And look what I have. God has blessed me. So we should rather consider how much we've been blessed rather than how much we're missing out on. Yeah, Dale?
To your point, some of the mission, water mission work I did in Mexico opened my eyes, and in preparation for this, I did a Google on global income, and it's important that you we use the word global. And I realize it's a response from Google, and so it may not be 100%, but if you make $35,000 a year, you are in the top global 1% of earners. Now, tax season coming up, it's a good time for us to take a look at that. Am I in the top 1% or 0.2%? We are so wealthy.
Yeah.
Just on Social Security. Sitting around.
I have said that before as well, also from the pulpit. Here in America, we are blessed. We are wealthy. Even almost everybody in America, even the poorest, are part of the top 1%. And we often don't realize that because we look at, well, look at the billionaires in our country and how they just extravagantly spend money, or the famous athletes and the actors. And look, rather than looking at that, we should just look at how blessed we are and be thankful for that. Yeah, we are absolutely part of the top 1%. Yeah. Okay. The lie repeated in the Bible, the parable of the wedding feast. So he recounts this parable from Jesus where somebody goes in and sits at one of the highest places at the table. And Jesus said, no, sit at the lowest place. And then you'll be honored when the host comes in and says, no, move up higher. Versus if you sit at the highest place and he comes in and says, oh, there's somebody else here. You need to move down. What is that a desire for? That's a desire for more and more of what? Why is that example in here?
Status.
Status. Attention. Prestige, right, exactly. Is that another thing we desire more of? Absolutely. It's not necessarily just things, money or goods. It's also status. It's also attention. We desire that more and more as well. So on page 58, kind of the second paragraph down, it sounded foreign in Jesus' day as well. One of the things people in Jesus' day wanted more and more of was prestige. People wanted to appear as though they were the most important, the most honorable. And then he mentions how Jesus' disciples even argued who was the greatest, right? I remember back in my day it was, well, my dad's better than your dad. That was kind of a form of prestige, right? All right. And then Jesus, there's this inset story there from Jesus about the scribes and the Pharisees, how they draw attention to themselves. They want that attention. They want that status or prestige. And I think that's true for us as well. I think we want attention. Think about little kids, and I experienced this too. Daddy, Daddy, look at me. Look what I did. Or I built a sandcastle. Yes, okay. Keep playing. You don't need to draw attention to it, but you know, that's the instinct of little kids. If they build a Lego thing, they want attention. Well, I don't think it's just kids. It's us too. We want attention. All right. On page 59, the parable of the workers in the vineyard. This is such a good parable. And so you guys are all familiar with it. The vineyard owner goes and hires people from the marketplace at the start of the day. They work all day. He promises to pay them what's a normal day's wage, a denarius. A denarius is enough to buy multiple loaves of bread and a little bit of other stuff. So if a poor person works for a day in a vineyard and gets paid a denarius, at the end of the day, he would be able to feed his family. Okay? So that was common. And then, of course, the vineyard owner goes back later in the day and later in the day and hires more workers. They only work part of the day or the last hour of the day, and he pays them the same. And what do the original workers think? It's not fair. Like little kids, it's not fair. And what does the vineyard owner say? I'm not being unfair to you. I'm paying you what I promised. I'm being generous with those other people. And so we read that parable, even today, even me, and I've preached on it, and I've taught on it, and I still think, to my nature, it just doesn't seem fair. He promised the first ones a denarius, but he gave a denarius to those who only worked a fraction of the day. Shouldn't he give the other ones a denarius and a half? You know, just to be fair? We still think that way. The point of the parable is that God, who's the vineyard owner, and we, who are the workers, God is generous. You who have been a Christian your entire life. Well, God, I've worked my entire life at defeating sin and strengthening my faith and learning your word. And here's somebody who converts to you and becomes a believer, a Christian, on the last hour of their life, and they get paid the same wage as I get paid. Shouldn't I get more glory in heaven? Well, Jesus says no. You're getting what you deserve for what I promised you. So I'm being generous with the person who converted to faith at the end of their life versus you who have been faithful your entire life. See, that's the parallel with this parable. And yet, even though I teach that, and I've preached that, down deep inside I still think, but it's still unfair. I have heard this, and I've expanded upon it. There is some benefit to the vineyard worker who worked the entire day but only got paid a denarius, which is actually the fair wage. That worker has a benefit over the worker who only worked the last hour of the day but got paid the same. Us who are Christians, our entire lives, there is a benefit to you versus somebody who's a Christian only their last hour of the day, of the life. Okay? The benefit is you have the peace of knowing you will get paid. So the worker who works an entire day knows that he's going to be able to feed his family that night. The worker only works half a day or a fraction of the day. He's a little nervous or a little anxious. No one's hired me yet. Are there any farmers here, any vineyard keepers? I don't know if I'm going to earn anything today to feed my family. We might go hungry tonight. So there's some anxiety there. The same thing with us as Christians. By being a Christian your entire life, you have the comfort, you have the peace of knowing God has a place for you in heaven. And despite the fact that you have to go through a lot of turmoil and persecution and temptation, you have the peace of knowing you have heaven waiting for you. Somebody who is a non-believer, they quite often struggle with the anxiety of knowing what's going to happen when I die. Is there an afterlife or not? And so they're anxious about death and what happens after that. And so they don't have the peace that you and I have. So that is a slight benefit. Call it a a bonus wage, if you will, to somebody who's worked the entire day or believed their entire life. Do you see what I'm saying? So yes, in our sinful nature, we say it's not fair. But God is being generous. He's paying everybody the same. Yeah, Becky.
But it's like a lifetime of walking with the Savior, so that is a tremendous blessing.
That is a tremendous blessing. A lifetime of walking with Jesus. Yeah. Right. Okay? Yeah, Betty.
You talk about it being unfair, and there's a fine line that I saw in my work at Whirlpool. I was searching for a file. I ran across a file that should have been in HR secluded, and it was he wasn't my boss, he was my equal. His name on there, I opened it up and found out in this file that he was hired in at more than what I was making after being there.
Oh, yeah.
Many years, 5 or 6 years. And how unfair that felt.
Yeah.
That, and I had to reconcile it that in my own mind that he was the breadwinner of his family, whereas I was not. It was extra income. And I just said, you know, this isn't worth trying to battle this and go into it. But it hurt.
Yeah, absolutely, it hurts.
Hurt.
Yeah.
The unfairness.
Yes.
There.
Yes.
And so what I'm trying to say is, sorry, men, you get paid more.
Yeah.
Women today are trying to reconcile that,
sure,
and make them as equals.
Sure, sure.
And so, I don't know, I struggle with this unfair.
Mm-hmm.
When our children were little, I remember vividly Jacob saying, but Dad, that's so unfair. He says, you're right, it is. But this is the way life is, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That matter of fact kind of, bam.
I've said that too to my kids. Well, life is unfair. You got to learn to deal with it. Yeah. And it is unfair, and then in a secular sense, that needs to be addressed, and I think maybe slowly over time it is, I'm not sure. But you're right, men have traditionally been paid more than a woman in the same job.
Right.
And that is unfair. So, now that's not a spiritual matter, so I could maybe separate that a little bit and say, okay, society needs to address those secular unfairness issues from what we would say this is a spiritual issue that Jesus is addressing. But yes, that does feel unfair. And I commend you for having that mature response, because I probably would have complained to HR and to my boss. Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah. All right.
Just keep your mouth shut and keep working.
Yeah, there you go. Good for you. That was a mature response. Yeah. Good. Yeah, Don.
You could plug in the parable of the prodigal son in the same instance.
Yes, the prodigal son, and you're right, that parable would fit with this teaching as well, because the prodigal son wanders away and squanders, and the faithful son, he's thinking it's not fair. He wandered away, and he gets a party, and I don't. So again, there's that issue of unfairness that we seem to naturally have in our nature, right? Yeah, Mark.
And how thankful we can be to God that he forgives these rascals.
Yeah.
Who at the end of their life, you know, they're our brother or son.
Right,
or
right.
Yeah,
right. So you turn it upside down and say we should be thankful for the prodigal who came back, because now he's returned to faith, you know, in that case, or returned to the family. Right. Yeah, Bob?
When you compare the denarius to heaven, you know, what other good thing can God give you other than heaven? You know, and so I've already given you heaven.
Yeah.
These guys are going to come in and have heaven too.
Yeah, you know? I've already given you heaven, which is everything.
Yeah.
How can I give you more than everything? Right. And yet we grumble about it not being fair, don't we? So the bottom of page 60, just that first sentence there, Satan stirs up discontentment in the laborers who have worked all day. Discontentment. I have had that in myself as well. I have felt that also. Where, you know, maybe especially as a kid. I'll use that as an example. Well, I worked an hour on my chores. My sisters only worked 20 minutes. They should have to do more chores than me. That's not fair, Mom and Dad. And then, yes, I get the response, life's not fair, deal with it. Right? We are discontent. All right. Good comments. Thank you. Page 61, the lie repeated in our world. We see this lie play out every day in ways that have become commonplace. We see a new phone is available and we want it. We see a bigger, sharper TV is on sale and we want it. We watch a new car drive by and we want it. Yes, that's what advertising does, right? Mm-hmm. Now, as far as advertising is just educating you because you're looking for a new phone, and so do I want this phone or that phone, and you're not coveting a better phone, but you need a phone, advertising is okay. It can be, I say can be okay or helpful. But yes, a lot of advertising, and of course it's dastardly on the part of some, you know, companies, they're trying to get you to want more than you already have, so you buy their product, right? And this is talking about products, a phone, a TV, a car. It's not just that, but it's also, what did we already talk about? Prestige, or status, or attention, or affection, or those types of things as well that we want more of. After all, that's the reason why we want to use deodorant, right? You want our deodorant. So that you have more affection from your loved one. Hide the odors. Right? Yes. Bottom of that second paragraph there. When we try to purchase friends, prestige, or glory through the giant TV, it cannot deliver. So actually, quite often, the reason we want more stuff is in order to have more friends and more attention. Mm-hmm. But it won't work, will it?
No.
You always are left feeling empty. Yeah. We may subconsciously look to such purchases for more than they can give, and we end up discontented. Yes, I think that's true. Last night we talked a little bit about how, actually one of my sons brought this up to me, not recently, but a while ago. He was mumbling about rich people, and why is it there's these rich people in the country, and they always seem to want more? And so they're always trying to get more and more and more and more. And I said, well, first of all, I agree with you. Why is it that in our nature, you know, how much is enough? And what's usually the answer?
Not enough.
A little bit more.
Or a little bit more, yes.
Enough. If I had a little bit more, it'd be enough. And then you get a little bit more, and what? I just want a little bit more again.
Yeah.
And it seems to never end. That's the mindset in our culture. Yeah. And I ended up telling my son, I said, well, if somebody is rich like that, but they're generous with their money, with charities, and they're not out just for the money, but they, because they were blessed with some invention or some creation, and it went viral, and they made a whole bunch of money, but then they're generous with their money, I said, that can sort of be a godly response. But yes, we have that tendency to want more and more, don't we? All right. Next page, 62. Oh, this is where he brings up some of those. You can tell he I think this was written in 2024, because he harkens back to COVID and the pandemic and the shortage of toilet paper. We all remember that.
Yes.
Yes.
We do.
Well, I remember. You know, we had probably a month's supply of toilet paper, a big pack. And yet Bob would tell me, Pastor, yes. Meyer is getting a delivery of toilet paper tomorrow. So I'd show up tomorrow, and I'd buy another pack. Thank you, Bob, for giving
me
a heads up. Yes. Taking care of your pastor, right?
That's right, that's right.
Did I need another pack of toilet paper? No. But because Bob would bring it out from the truck and put it on the shelves, and within an hour it's gone, so I was there with everybody else buying another pack, so now I have 2 months of supply. Do I really need it? No. That's an idea of fear of scarcity, right? That happened. How many of you guys all remember that?
Uh-huh.
We can laugh about it now, but back then, that was kind of illogical. You know, there was a hand up over here. Was it Bob back there?
I think that's called inside trading.
Yes. Right. Very good. But I appreciate it, Bob.
Yes, you're welcome. You're welcome.
He mentions also a shortage on flour and feta cheese. I don't remember that.
I don't either.
Somebody last night said, where is he located, Pastor Jones? And I said, he's in California, so that's why a feta cheese shortage would be a big deal to those in California. Right? I do remember we had an egg issue recently, right?
Yeah.
There was a bird flu or something, and so eggs were somewhat short of supply and more expensive.
Yeah.
So there again, people were out for that. Right in the middle of page 62, the desire for more and more derives from a mindset of scarcity, and it drives us to hoard things, right? Like chocolate in our closet. Why do I have chocolate in my closet? I don't need it there. Yeah. All right, top of page 63. The church is not immune to this. Oh, how appropriate is that statement? So looking down the third paragraph down, we so often choose a pretend superiority, which is just another version of this lie. We pretend we are better than those other churches, these other Christians, so we deserve better too. So here's one that kind of hits a little home for me, because I am proud of the fact that I'm Lutheran. Because I think Lutherans, more than other denominations, we strive consciously to teach correctly the Holy Scriptures and all the doctrines of theology. And yet, does that cross over into sinful pride, where I'm like, I start to think, well, our church is better than those other churches? Well, in the fact that we strive to teach correctly, maybe that's true, but they're still going to heaven, they still believe in Jesus, we'll still see him in heaven. So where does the pride go from a desire for pure teaching to a sinful pride of superiority? There's a line that, in my mind, I know I sometimes cross. I kind of go back and forth over that line. You see what I mean? So I'm just using myself as an example. This happens to me. And so I have to remind myself sometimes, oh, those other Christians who don't understand certain areas of theology correctly, yet they'll still be in heaven. I have to be thankful for that they're still going to be in heaven, even though they're misunderstanding certain things. Okay? Any comments? Thoughts? Yeah, Bob.
Is that where pride comes in?
Yeah, pride, right. And so some pride is okay to motivate you to do what's right, but some pride goes too far and becomes sinful. So where is that line? I don't know, but I know I cross it going back and forth all the time. Yeah. Okay. Write down that, next to that inset on the bottom of page 63, behind the desire for more is a desire for less. We hope for fewer obstacles and challenges in life. We often think that having more money and more stuff will bring about a life that is ease and no drama. But that simply is not the case. So our desire for more often stems from a desire to avoid problems in life. Right? Oh, if I just had a little bit more money, I wouldn't have to worry about any challenges or problems in life. Well, I have heard, don't know this for sure, but I have heard people with more money often have more problems. So, if I just had a little more money, I wouldn't have so many problems. Yeah, you'd probably have more because of the pressures on you. And then he makes that point there at the bottom of 63 and onto the next page. He mentions this documentary called Broke. I tried to find that. And if you just look up a documentary called Broke, there's a movie called Broke about cowboys breaking horses. Okay? That's not what he's talking about. So then I put on, I tried to do a little more complex search and, documentary on athletes who've gone broke. And there's some ESPN documentary out there, but I couldn't access it. So I'm guessing that's what he's talked about. But of course, we've heard these stories. You get a 21-year-old who all of a sudden makes $2 million for catching a ball or batting a ball. And then they retire after a half a dozen years, and another few years after that, they're broke. And one of the things I noticed when I did this little search briefly, looking for this, both the NBA and the NFL, which are two of the professional leagues that have some of the highest paid athletes, they are starting to have financial seminars for rookies on how to manage their money. Because it's become a problem. People are given a whole pot of money, especially a young person, 21-year-old, 22-year-old, 23-year-old, they don't know what to do. They go out and spend willy-nilly, and then inside of 10 years, they're broke. They're bankrupt. And you hear about that also with famous people, actors and movie stars, right?
People that win the lottery.
People that win the lottery, and there's another one. You just won $10 million in the lottery, and 8 years later, you're broke? What happened? How can that be? And to me, that's a mind-blower, but it happens a lot.
Yeah.
People don't know how to manage their money, and they want more and more stuff, so they get this pot of money, and they just spend it on stuff. Yeah. All right, so the middle of page 64. Before I continue, any other comments or thoughts?
Pastor,
great.
I have a degree in economics, but I can't handle money. Sandra told me.
There you go. Are you a spender? Do you like to spend? No? Okay.
Well, I know a new bass boat, I could catch more fish.
Oh, okay. You're not a spender other than a new boat.
And if there's a new gun,
And a new gun, okay, all right. Hunting, yeah. See, those are okay. That's okay. Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. What's the truth? Page 64, right in the middle. The truth is, we do not have to seek more and more because our God is the creator and sustainer of the world. He has given us all that we need to support this body and life and still takes care of us. Ooh, there's a quote from the Small Catechism. Does God give you everything you need all the time? Without fail.
Yeah.
Yes. So why are we scared of scarcity? Why are we afraid of that? And we want more, and we want to hoard more, and we want to gather more. And then he says, his invitation is to pray, give us this day our daily bread. He doesn't say, Jesus doesn't teach us, give me this month my weekly bread, my monthly bread. Give us this day our daily bread. Each day, God will bless you with what you need. We don't need to be so anxious about tomorrow. Doesn't Jesus say that? He says in that quote right there from Matthew chapter 6, that's the Sermon on the Mount. He says, seek first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be added to you. You know, a good example of this, remember in the Old Testament when the Israelites were wandering in the wilderness, and God was feeding them with manna? What did he tell them? One day manna, that's it. Mm-hmm. If they gathered more than one day of manna off the dew of the ground, what would happen to it the next day?
Spoiled.
It had maggots.
Maggots, yeah.
Yes, worms, it says, I think. There was one exception to that. The day before the Sabbath, they could collect 2 days' worth of manna to feed their family, and it would not go bad the next day because it was the Sabbath. They were to rest. Have a day of rest, day of relaxation. But otherwise, if you tried to gather too much, it would go bad. By the way, I don't know if any of you ever knew this, and I've been tempted to see if I could find somebody's speculation of a recipe. Manna, supposedly, it says this in the Bible, that it tasted like coriander and honey. So it's quite pleasant, actually. Don't think of dry crackers. That's not what it was. It was like a fine flour, and they would use it to make bread. So that's what they had, was the manna was bread. And apparently it tasted very pleasant. Although I suppose if that's all your main thing you're eating for 40 years, I still might get sick of it. But when you're hungry, you'll eat it. Of course, they did get tired of it, didn't they? Because then what did they complain for? We want meat! We want meat! So then God acquiesced and gave them quail. I've never had a quail. Who's had a quail? Is it good? Is it good?
Delicious.
Delicious? They're little, yeah, little.
Okay. Hard to clean.
Are they?
Oh,
okay. Yeah, Dale.
One of the things that keeps coming back is you talked about God giving us things. Yes, he does. But we still are obliged to put an effort into work. This isn't a gift I can sit around and it's going to come to the door.
Right.
Even before there was sin, Adam and Eve tended the garden.
They did.
There was work when...
That's right. That was their job. Yep.
Yes, we're we will be given gifts, but we are also expected to put effort.
Yes, that's right. We can't just be lazy. Yeah, exactly right. There's something that we might want more and more of, especially in our affluent culture, is leisure time. Right? We want to be lazy. I know that one strikes home for me. There are times I get home and I don't want to do anything. Well, I got to cook dinner or I got to help with the dishes, so I just want to be lazy. We want more and more of laziness or leisure, don't we? Yeah, Sandy.
Well, that's the theme of the latest Lutheran Witness.
Leisure. Oh, I didn't even look at it. Yeah. Well, good. Yeah, so ties in.
Yep.
All right. All right, page 65 at the top. Jesus' invitation is to trust that God will take care of us, to be content with what we have and not to seek after more and more and more and more and more and more. Whether we are seeking more money, more honor, more fame, or more power, Jesus tells us to stop. More power, we want control, we want to do things our way. More fame, we want attention, we want people to notice us, to recognize us. Yeah, more money and goods and things. Yes, stuff, we want more stuff. Down at the bottom of that section, no one is exempt from the sly, but it seems increasingly dangerous the more material goods and comforts we actually have. Very true, isn't it? Oh my goodness, I just looked at the time. We should have been done 10 minutes ago, so we had time for the other stuff. Yeah, you guys will give me a little bonus time, right? All right. There's always more. More time. Very good. Whoever said that, very good. Very good. Yeah. Okay. Bottom of page 65. God's desired outcome is that no matter how much we have, we trust Him more and more. We trust God to provide for us. Paul says in Philippians, I've learned in whatever situation I am to be content. Now, that can be true in one area, but not in another. And I'll give myself as an example again. Yes, I had always, growing up, had always wanted a Dodge Viper. Bob's heard me say this. Then I got to the seminary. We only had one car because of expenses. I wasn't working. We had three young kids. Carissa wasn't born yet. We had one car, and because Jill had to drive Andrew to preschool and back, I walked to school from the house that we got to seminary classes. It was about a mile and a half. So not super long, doable, but I knew if I didn't leave 20 minutes before class, I was going to be late because I had to cross the street and go this way and walk through. So when I had the opportunity to buy a second car, a beater, it was a 1990 white Mitsubishi Mirage with like 160,000 miles on it. A whole bunch of things on it didn't work, like air conditioning and radio. But it ran, and it stopped. You know, braked. It was safe. I was so thankful for that car. I came to realize, you know, while I would love to have a Dodge Viper, it's really not important. I think my desire for a fancy car as a young man just went away at that point. Okay? So even though my desire for more and more in a vehicle went away, I still had a desire for more and more other stuff, like chocolate and food and attention from my wife and, you know, things like that. So you can overcome this desire for more in one area of life and still have that battle in another area of life. Okay? All right. Next page, 66. Right in the middle, there's some questions that I thought were very appropriate, and I'm going to postpone those questions to the questions section when we get there in just a moment. It says, in an affluent culture, what does it look like to live faithfully when we have an abundance? I want to have a little discussion about that with you in just a moment when we get there. Near the bottom of page 66, God has given us all that we have. God can take away all that we have in a moment. God's desired outcome is that we recognize Him as the source of what we have. I remember hearing Pastor Q say a couple of times in a Bible study and in a sermon that we need to be thankful for what God has given us because we cannot even begin to imagine the ways that God could take it away from us if He chose to. If we start to idolize our stuff, God can take it away. All it takes is one severe sickness, a big hospital bill, a tree falling on your house, a natural disaster, a car accident, whatever. God can take away your stuff if you start to idolize it. Well, that is very true. We have to remember that. We have to remember it all comes from God. He is the giver of all things. Page 67, the love that casts out fear. Since the Lord is our shepherd, we lack nothing. Yes, Psalm 23. It's the most well-known psalm. It's the most well-known passage of the Bible. It's one that most of you have memorized for good reason. But since the Lord is our shepherd, I shall not want. How wonderful is that? Absolutely. God provides what we need when we need it. Near the bottom of page 67, God's presence casts out fear. We need not fear scarcity with Him. We need not fear missing out on what other people have. My daughter showed me a little joke picture meme that she saw recently, just yesterday. And I should have asked her to send it to me, and I didn't. I'm going to try and get a copy of it and maybe briefly show it to you next week. It was a picture of one of these little Jesus figures. You guys have seen these? Maybe you got one? I passed them out to all the school kids at the start of the school year, and I had a basket of a bunch of them for like two Sundays in a row, and I know a lot of people in church picked them up too. You know, just put it in your pocket or on your nightstand or in your car. You got yours with you, Fred? Nice! Just reminds you Jesus is always with you. Well, this little joke meme that my daughter showed me had one of these little Jesus figures sitting on a counter, and there was a dinner roll in front of it. Then you went to the next picture, and it was the same Jesus figure, and there was a whole bunch of dinner rolls and a pile of goldfish crackers. Jesus had multiplied the bread and the fishes. I looked at that and I thought, oh, that's cute. That's a great little idea. And she showed me that. And she's, a couple of her friends that she hangs out with are Christian. And so they talk about religious things now and then. And a number of them carry these little Jesus figures. And I said, that's a cute little meme about Jesus providing what we need. I should have said, send that picture to me. And I didn't. So I'm going to try and get a copy of it. Alright? So that brings us to the end of the written section. Let's just take 5 or 10 minutes and look at some of this other stuff, okay? So, scripture for meditation, Psalm 23. I got it on the screen. I shall not want. How true that is. God will provide what you need when you need it. And then if we look at Ephesians chapter 3. Ephesians chapter 3. And let's see, that's verses 14 to 21. I think the reason Pastor Jones put this in here is for the end of it. For this reason, I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth is named, that according to the riches of His glory, He may grant you to be strengthened with power through His Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. That you, being rooted and grounded in love, may have strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. Now to Him who is able to do far more abundantly than all that we ask or think, according to the power at work within us, to Him be glory in the church and in Christ Jesus throughout all generations, forever and ever. Amen. Does God give you more abundantly the fullness of Christ than we actually deserve? Absolutely. We ask Him for forgiveness, and not only does He forgive you, He pours forgiveness upon you. We ask for His grace and His mercy. He pours it out abundantly upon you. Jesus gives us more than we deserve, and I think that's the point of this little passage here. More than we deserve. Okay, the next little Bible passage here, he's got Luke chapter 11, 1 through 13. So this is the story of the Lord's Prayer from Luke. Now, the Lord's Prayer we pray is from Matthew, which is the more complete version. Of course, Jesus taught the Lord's Prayer a couple of times. Mm-hmm. This is another time, a different location when He taught the Lord's Prayer. It's a shortened version. But He says at the end of teaching here in Luke, Jesus does, that he says, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. When you ask God to provide, does he provide what is needed?
Yes.
Yes. And part of this too is we pray, give us this day our daily bread. But here in the Luke version, it's slightly different. What does it say?
Give us each
day our daily bread. Slightly different. Very close, but slightly different. God, give me what I need for today. I'm not worried about tomorrow. I'm going to trust in you for tomorrow. Give me what I need for today. And that made me think, I've got one more scripture lesson. You can write this in your book. So, while I'm very pleased with the writing of Pastor Jones, I think he missed something. An opportunity here. Because this came to mind for me. Proverbs chapter 30, verse 8. I'm going to actually read for you Proverbs chapter 30, verses 7 through 9. See if this doesn't fit with the idea on this chapter about wanting more and more. Verses 7 through 9, Proverbs chapter 30. Two things I ask of you. Deny them not to me before I die. Remove far from me falsehood and lying. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. Isn't that some wise teaching? We don't want to be poor, because then we're going to despair, and it might cause it to drive us into sin or, you know, theft or whatever. We don't want to be rich, because if you're rich, what happens? You start to deny God. You walk away from God. Well, I got my own stuff. I don't need God. Why do I need to trust Him? Really? What are we asking for here in Proverbs? To be middle class. Right? Such is all of us.
We made it.
We made it. Yes.
We're there.
See, I think this passage should have, Pastor Jones should have included this in that section. Okay, so on page 68, the questions. I came to realize as I was reading these questions, he's asking nearly the same questions every chapter, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll kind of go through them somewhat quickly. Where do you see this lie appearing in your life?
Work.
Work, sure. Want more and more, or I'm not paid like they're paid, or I don't have the time off they have off. Yes. Sure.
Told you earlier. My toolbox.
Yeah, your toolbox, right. Oh, I want that tool. I want that tool. Yeah.
Family gatherings,
sure. Looking at Facebook. Oh, look at everything that that family has. Why don't I have that? I want more and more. In what situations do you find it most difficult to be content? Yeah, Bob?
When I spill my stuff all over the kitchen.
Okay. You're not content with yourself?
Yeah. I'm not content with him.
Oh, you're not content with him. There you go. Yeah. I put down for me when I feel like I'm lacking something. When I feel like something's missing, I'm not content.
But Pastor, I think your stage in life has a lot to do with it too.
I agree. I agree. As you age and mature and you come to realize that, you know what, priorities, I don't need that fancy car, I don't need those, you know, that big vacation, I don't need the big TV. I'm happy with, you know, my family, my church family. You know, my faith, you know, you come to realize a little bit more. So maybe more contentment comes into life as you mature in age. Maybe, yeah. Can you remember a time when you were afraid of missing out?
Pastor?
What was that like? Yeah, Betty.
I have a question.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
It's not a question, just a comment. I just remember, like, when I was cleaning out my parents' house after they died and all the stuff that they had accumulated. Mm-hmm. And now I look around my house, all the stuff I have.
Oh, yes, right.
And it's like, why did I ever need or want this stuff?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Why do I have all this stuff? Yeah, I agree. That is a time where that happens. Can you remember a time when you were afraid of missing out? What was that like? Well, I'd say for me, a time when I realized I didn't get invited to a party as a kid. You know, somebody had a party, the popular kids had a party, and I wasn't invited, a few of us weren't invited. Yeah. I was a nerd. You know what that's like, John?
Oh, yeah. I can relate. Yeah.
I had a fear of missing out. I don't know, other issues, other situations?
Usually if you have a sibling, there's going to be that tension.
Yes.
She got more than I did.
Yes, right, right. That happens a lot with siblings, right, yeah. Both ways. And there's times where you get more than your sibling gets, and you it's fair, because I'm better.
You're a middle child, not very old.
Yeah, middle child, that's a problem, right. All right, whom can you trust to tell the truth when you're struggling with this lie? Same answers we've been given. A good faithful spouse, tell you the truth. A good friend, family member, a pastor, tell you the truth. Can you think of other biblical characters who struggle with always wanting more?
Three stand out to me on this.
Okay.
I gave some thought. Abraham.
Okay.
He wanted more kids.
Yeah.
And even though after Sarah died, he remarried in, I don't know, 5 or 6, which you never hear anything about.
Right.
Plus concubines where he was having kids.
Yeah, with right.
They applied not a lot.
Right.
David.
Yes.
5 wives, Bathsheba.
Yes, right.
Solomon, who God gave him the gift of wisdom, and he squandered it. He ended up with 700 wives and 300 concubines.
Yes.
What would Sunday dinner be like?
Yes, right. Yes, Solomon, in that regard, absolutely.
Yeah, and in fact, God destroyed Israel because of Solomon's lifestyle with those 700 wives. That's what he said. Destroyed it. So he may have built the temple, but he destroyed Israel.
Yeah, yeah, right. Very good. Yeah, I think all those. Yeah, Don.
Jacob?
Okay, sure. Yeah, he didn't want his first wife, so he worked for his second wife.
Inheritance.
He wanted the inheritance. He coveted the inheritance, right. Yeah. The one that came to mind for me was Judas. Judas wanted more. And by the way, we haven't used the word coveting or jealousy, have we? But that's related to this. Mm-hmm. You want more because you covet what the other person has. You're jealous of what the other person has and you don't have, and so you want more. So those two words should have been worked into this discussion along the way. Okay, then the last question, we'll sum it up with this. You go back to page 66. And I just want to spend just a minute or two, then we'll wrap it up. In an affluent culture, which we have, and all of us are affluent on worldly standards, in an affluent culture, what does it look like to live faithfully when we have an abundance? How do we content ourselves with when life is abundantly full with more than we need? How do we trust God more and more when we are quite comfortable? Those are all versions of the same question. So what do you guys think?
Share more.
Share more. Okay. So be generous. Be generous with the affluence that we have. Yep. Don?
Acknowledge that it all comes from God.
Okay. So give thanks. Tell God thank you for what you've given me. Yeah, I agree. We need to remember it comes from God. And remember Pastor Q's comment. God can take it away just like he gave it all to you. He can take it away. Yeah. Fred?
Taking on the burden of others.
Okay, helping others with their burdens. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Serve each other. Any other thoughts? I think those are the right answers. Yeah, we should do that. Remind ourselves constantly that it comes from God and He is a generous God. And we are merely stewards. We are stewards of what God has blessed us with, and we should be good stewards. We should give thanks, we should be generous, we should help others. All right, any final thoughts or comments? Yeah, Jeannie.
Because of doing this class, I could see in a movie we were watching that the bad guy was, well, you deserve this. You want, you know, if they brought out all those
Yeah, devilish traits, right? Bad guys in movies often have devilish traits, don't they? All right, let's rise and close. You can remain seated if you need to, but if you're able, rise, and we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thanks for coming. Have a good day.